Chapter 7, The Fourth Principle, Contemplation. Quote, contemplation is the highest form of activity, unquote. That's by Aristotle. Every discovery of something new involves the crucial concept of contemplation. Think about airplanes weighing hundreds of tons, flying around the world in relatively short periods of time. A century or so ago, they didn't exist, but then the law of flying was discovered. By generating a high rate of speed and designing wings that forced the air to push upward, lo and behold, heavier-than-air objects were staying aloft. When the Wright brothers arrived at Kitty Hawk, they hadn't been focusing on how things stayed on the ground. Rather, they'd been contemplating the elevation of things moving in the air. So because they and others like them were willing to seriously think about something that didn't yet exist, air travel was brought into our reality system. Contemplation is the mental activity behind all inventions, indeed behind all of creation. Consequently, I urge you to become fully conscious of how you choose to use your mind as you study the fourth excuses begone principle and its relationship to action. It's important that you understand that you can create the life you desire by concentrating on what you wish to attract. Once you master the ideas surrounding this concept, you won't want to use your mind for the purpose of excuse-making. Instead, you'll prefer to use it to really consider what you want to manifest into your life and then visualize it as coming true. The principle of contemplation is also what motivates human progress in cultural, political, and social contexts. For example, the idea of slavery being a horrible stain on the spiritual nature of humankind was realized by one person first and then another until the practice was finally abolished. The idea of women having the same right to vote as men was also conceived in a few minds before becoming a reality. These notions were contemplated first, and their destiny fits this sentiment from Victor Hugo: there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. Contemplation and attraction. The excuses you tend to rely on probably include some ideas that you've contemplated throughout your life to date. Yes, even thinking it will be difficult, or I can't afford it, or I don't deserve it, is engaging in what Aristotle called the highest form of activity. The more you ponder the impossibility of having your desires show up, complain about life's unfairness, and get upset about what continues to manifest, the more those very things define your reality. That's because whatever you focus on invariably shows up in your life, be it what you want or what you don't want. So if you're always thinking or talking about what's wrong with your life, then you're attracting exactly what you don't desire. Choosing an excuses-begone approach means that you absolutely refuse to participate in the self-defeating rhythm that I just touched on. You learn to move into a new realm where your thoughts are viewed as potential realities, and it's your sacred duty to contemplate only that which originates from your authentic self. This is something you can begin to work on right away. I learned a long time ago from one of my mentors, Abraham Maslow, that self-actualizing people never use their minds to think about what they don't wish to attract. They don't worry about an illness getting worse, an absence of funding, or a downturn in the economy affecting them, a negative outcome in a business venture, their children getting into trouble, and so on. Their minds focus on the conditions they wish to produce. Then the lucky break, the right people or circumstances, or the synchronistic opportunity somehow presents itself as a result of their contemplation. We all become what we think about, so it's pretty important to pay attention to those thoughts. And keep in mind what Aldous Huxley once noted, that contemplation is that condition of alert passivity in which the soul lays itself open to the divine ground within and without, the immanent and transcendent Godhead, he called it. It's as if by thinking about what you desire, you release a zillion little invisible yet alert worker bees who guide you in the action of creation. Rather than being focused on a lame excuse, you use your mind to align with the all-knowing, transcendent Godhead. And when you use your mind in this way, miracles begin to show up. This makes me think about something that recently happened to my daughter Serena. After graduating from the University of Miami, she and her friend Lauren were excited about creating a television show focusing on healthy eating and cooking and general living geared toward their age group. We could all easily imagine Serena and Lauren hosting the show, and they went so far as to write a proposal and practice presenting the idea in a TV format. Unfortunately, they didn't seem to be able to find the right person or agency to represent them. I asked Serena to contemplate herself surrounded by what she and Lauren wanted to attract, and to discard excuses such as, it will be difficult, it's never happened before, it's too big, or I'm too young. I reminded her to just keep contemplating, because that's the highest form of activity. Neither of us anticipated the way this would work out, but to understand, you first need a bit of history. About 15 years ago, my daughter's best friend, Jessie Gold, and her family spent an evening with us in our summer apartment on Maui. That night, 7-year-old Serena had the entire gathering in tears one moment and laughing hysterically the next as she entertained us with her natural acting ability. Jessie's father, Harry, even wrote an agreement at that time, saying in effect that when Serena came to Los Angeles to become an actress, he'd like to represent her. He signed this spirit-of-the-moment contract and gave it to my wife, who kept it, unbeknownst to Serena, all these years. Back to the present. A decade and a half had passed, and I was running late for a meeting in Burbank to discuss a television show with some producers. The traffic was heavy, I had difficulty finding a parking spot, and it felt as if nothing was going right with respect to the timing of this appointment. As I finally entered the lobby of the building where the meeting was to take place, the elevator door began to close as I approached. Thankfully, however, someone held it open. I breathed a sigh of relief as I headed to my meeting on the 14th floor, and that's when I noticed that Harry Gold, who happens to be one of the top talent agents on the West Coast, was the person who was holding the elevator door open for me. Although we hadn't seen each other in years, Harry insisted that I stop in to say hello to Jessie, who was working part-time in a restaurant in the same building while she pursued her own career. We all hugged and laughed and marveled at the set of circumstances that brought Harry and me together at that moment, in that elevator. And when I called Serena's mom later, she pulled out that little contract written in jest some 15 years ago. By contemplating herself surrounded by the conditions she wished to attract, I believe that my daughter created an alignment that caused me to arrive late for that appointment at precisely the right moment that Harry could hold the elevator for me. Coincidence, maybe, but what a beautiful coincidence it was. So many things had to appear to go wrong in order for all of this to manifest. Serena has now been able to welcome an opportunity for producing her own television show with representation for her idea by someone who agreed to do so in writing when she was a 7-year-old child, someone who was as close to her as her own family was when she was a little girl. Now, I'm not the least bit concerned about the outcome of Serena's adventure. The point is that when you engage in the act of active contemplation, you set in motion a powerful force. You allow yourself to be lived by the great universal mind or Tao. And I have no doubt that as my daughter continues her contemplative work, eschewing any excuse patterns and keeping all of her mental activity on what she intends to manifest, she'll see this kind of an occurrence showing up regularly. What she does with it and where it will go are all wrapped up in what she continues to contemplate. The mechanics of contemplation. Both Aristotle and Aldous Huxley offered us wonderful insights regarding the principle of contemplation. They both explain how the very act of reflecting on an idea, any idea, sets the process of creation into action. This is an integral component of living an excuses-begone life. As we know, Aristotle wrote, contemplation is the highest form of activity. And Huxley hit it on the head when he reminded us that the very process allows our soul to open to the divine guidance that operates within us and everywhere in the universe simultaneously. I've also been greatly influenced on this subject by a brilliant scholar named Thomas Troward. In 1910, he delivered a series of lectures that became books, which forever changed the way we look at the process of creation and manifestation. His writings can help us understand the power of contemplation, particularly in relationship to creation itself. I urge you to read his remarkable treatise, The Creative Process in the Individual. In the foreword, Troward writes, quote, in the present volume, I have endeavored to set before the reader the conception of a sequence of creative action commencing with the formation of the globe and culminating in a vista of infinite possibilities attainable by everyone who follows up the right line for their unfoldment, unquote. In the subsequent pages, he relates that the entire cosmos was created by self-contemplation, and infinite possibilities are available if you follow a pertinent sequence of creative action. This is all attainable for whoever is willing to follow up the right line, if you will. Troward asks you to get the steps of the creative process clearly into your mind as they relate to contemplation, and then watch excuses melt away and see the results of your efforts. Here's a summary of the four-part sequencing or right line for your consideration. 1. Spirit is created by self-contemplation. The process of moving from non-being to being involves an invisible source which we call spirit, deciding to expand into the world of form. This is God expressing himself or herself in all material things. Thus, coming from their originating nature, everything and everyone is a result of spirit contemplating itself and expressing its inherent life, love, light, power, peace, beauty, and joy as a part of the material world. And then two, so what it contemplates itself as being, it becomes. Contemplation by spirit results in the manifestation of what is being contemplated. Troward goes to great lengths in his book to explain the divine ideal and how the very cosmos had to come into being as a result of how the originating spirit, Tao or God, engaged in self-contemplation for the purpose of expressing life. And then three, he says, you are individualized spirit. Here's where you once again are urged to recognize your own divinity. You too were materialized from non-being, spirit, to being, form, by the self-contemplation of spirit itself. And spirit itself is oneness, indivisible. Since you are a piece of God, so to speak, the following conclusion is offered by Troward. And this is number four. Therefore, what you contemplate as the law of your being becomes the law of your being. And he goes on to state that you must use your creative power of thought to maintain your unity with spirit, rather than to create a separate sense of self that is cut off from spirit and suffers from poverty and limitation. That is to say, as long as you're able to use your power of contemplation and stay in harmony with how spirit contemplates itself, you have precisely the same powers of manifestation. After all, in the truest sense of the word, you are the same as your originating spirit. The separate sense of self that Troward refers to comes from the troublesome ego. To understand the power of contemplation, you must strive to understand the law of your being as one that allows you to use your thought processes to remain aligned with spirit or source energy. While I recognize that the information in this section may seem a bit too esoteric for your taste, if you carefully digest the works of Thomas Troward and the creative process in you as a self-actualizing individual, you'll clearly see that contemplation is a powerful tool that may have escaped you up until now. That's because of your focus on your ego and the excuses you've employed to explain away your deficiencies. Try imagining that everything and everyone originates in formless energy that you agree to call spirit. And then imagine spirit as a creative force that uses contemplation to express itself in a material form. You are an individualized expression of that same contemplation, so you actually have the possibility of doing precisely the same thing. The only requirement is that you don't dismiss your spiritual nature and replace it with a false self. The false self contemplates from a position of excuses because it cannot manifest the creative energy necessary for the life it desires. So the mechanics of contemplation boil down to these steps. Number one, contemplation is the continual use of your thought process. Two, your thoughts are actually like things that act to begin the process of materialization. Three, if you contemplate with thoughts that match originating spirit, you have the same power as originating spirit. 4. When contemplation is a vibrational match to originating spirit, you gain the cooperation of divine mind, attracting and fulfilling your desires. 5. Contemplation is therefore a kind of action in and of itself, which sets into motion all of the creative forces of the universe. 6. When you rely on excuses, you allow your false self, the ego, to concentrate on what you don't want or why you can't create it for yourself. 7. The presence of excuses in your life is evidence that you focus on what you can't do or have, rather than the infinite possibilities that are inherent in your divine creative self. And 8. To rid yourself of excuses, you must learn to practice contemplating what you intend to manifest and simultaneously detach from the outcome. And 9. Contemplate like God does, with thoughts of, how may I serve, rather than, what's in it for me? And finally, 10. Remember Troward's famous observation, the law of flotation, was not discovered by contemplating the sinking of things. In other words, when you see what you contemplate as if it's already here, the universe will ultimately offer you experiences that match what you're contemplating. Suggestions for implementing a new way of contemplating. First, Thomas Troward urges us to grasp the idea that the contemplation of spirit as power is the way for the individual to generate that same power within himself or herself. We all have it in us, he says, and it depends upon us to get it out into expression. Your mind is always contemplating something, mulling this or that over and over again. Take some time each day, or even several times each day, to contemplate spirit as power, rather than continuing the inner dialogue that generally results in your latching onto the same old excuse patterns. Try something like this. The creative and intelligent power manifests perfectly as the universe. I am a result of this power. I feel connected to it, and I know it will work with me in creating the life I desire. See your mind as a powerful force that's in harmony with the same power that's behind all of creation. Contemplate just this one idea, and you'll activate an excuses-begone cosmology for yourself. And second, begin the practice of viewing contemplation as action rather than as passive mental meandering. Treasure your mind as a grand gift from your Creator, a gift so wondrous that it has the Creator's mind inside of it as well. View your contemplative moments the same way you view your practice time for improving your skills at any endeavor. An hour a day throwing a bowling ball is action that leads to a higher bowling average. A few moments several times a day musing about what you intend to manifest in some area of your life will have precisely the same effect on your manifesting average. Contemplation is action. It's necessary mind training for the implementation of anything you desire. And then third, repeat the following mantra to yourself for a minimum of 5 straight minutes every day. I contemplate myself surrounded by the conditions I wish to attract into my life. Say it quickly and repeatedly, even if it sounds ludicrous to do so. The repetition will help you begin to imagine the right people or circumstances, the necessary funding, or whatever it is that you desire. Stay detached and allow the universe to take care of the details. Stop focusing on those ancient excuses of yours and instead cooperate with the all-creating universal mind that can do anything and is part and parcel of your divine self. Again, I contemplate myself surrounded by the conditions I wish to attract into my life. I'm closing this chapter with one of Thomas Troward's pieces of advice which has served me flawlessly since I was first made aware of his contribution to the art of mental science. This is the practice I've employed in manifesting my own desires for several decades now. Allow Troward's words on manifesting your heart's desire to resonate with you, even if his wording may appear to be convoluted and unusual. Quote, simply use the one method of creative process, that is, the self-contemplation of spirit. We now know ourselves to be reciprocals of the divine spirit, centers in which it finds a fresh standpoint for self-contemplation. And so the way to rise to the heights of this great pattern is by contemplating and or appreciating it as the normal standard of our own personality. Allow yourself to reflect upon the above until it registers. You gain the power of creation by contemplating yourself as you are already.